Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Here today to talk about an interesting topic on video. We have Joe Mahoney of Mile High Report. Joe, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right. It's a long weekend. I think everybody's hopefully doing all right at this point on a Friday before a 3-day weekend. So
yeah, there you go. Just starting out. If you're feeling like you're already getting antsy about going back to work, this is not the proper time. We got football coming up soon. A lot of great conversations we get to have during the month of July, in particular, where football is on hiatus. You know, we're waiting for camp to start. But this time we're going to talk about an interesting one in terms of sustainability of quarterback play. And you wrote an interesting article about that. Certainly, there's at least a couple of qualities of sustainability we could talk about, Joe. But one would be in terms of Lamar Jackson injury. And I think that's been covered a lot of other ways, including a great piece by Sarah Ellison. But we're going to talk about how likely it is for a quarterback like Jackson, who has a big year early in his career, to repeat that season. And you know, a lot of people figured regression was likely for Lamar Jackson. We saw some of that in 2020, although I think he still had a great year. But I want to go through your research that led you up to some conclusions about Jackson that were just published on Mile High Report in the last week or so.
Okay. So I first had to answer the question, how do you define a great season by a quarterback? And I looked at it in three different ways. Passer rating, and so I said 108 or better, and that gave me 34 seasons where a quarterback has done that. Then I looked at touchdown to interception ratio, and there were 51 seasons where a quarterback has had a touchdown to interception ratio of 4 or better. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at total touchdowns, and I set the bar at 40, and there were 31 seasons where a quarterback has had 40 or more total touchdowns. And that's where Lamar Jackson came into play with his legs, because while he only threw for 36 in 2019, he ran for another 7. Mm-hmm. So his 43 touchdowns was, I think, 12th or 13th best all time among quarterbacks for total touchdowns that they've contributed in a year.
And you've got three statistics there, and I want to talk about them as we go, but let's hit on passer rating first, because it's the most commonly known by football fans. And I think one of the things that has to be accepted about passer rating is, and you could slide back up to it if you, or leave it here on the chart.
The formula?
Yeah, the formula, if you would, because I think that's the important thing. I don't want to focus people on players and have them reading that while I'm trying to make a historical comment about this, is that it was developed in about 1969 or 70, and they created this statistic. So at the time, they would use four different factors: completion percentage, yards per attempt, touchdowns per attempt, interceptions per attempt. Those four factors would be related to league averages, and that an average quarterback, based on the averages of the day, we're talking right around the time of the merger, would come out to have a 67 rating. Now, we know that quarterback ratings have been inflated significantly since then, and the league-leading total last year for Aaron Rodgers, what, about 122 or something?
Yeah, it was one of the best seasons of all time.
Okay, and we've had other seasons in the 120 range, and correct. You know, Lamar Jackson's career figure is over 100. It doesn't mean he's 50% better necessarily than the guys who had a 67 quarterback rating in 1970. And that's important, because he's not that much better than the league average than he with that kind of a quarterback rating.
Right. So Lamar Jackson's by passer rating, his season in 2019 was the 12th best of all time. He had a passer rating of 113.3. And but in terms of league compared to the average, I know the number off the top of my head for 2020. The average passer rating in the league was 93.9 mm-hmm. in 2020. So there were years where the best passer in the league, and I actually did a study on this last month, where the best passer in the league had a lower passer rating than 93.9. Steve Young won the MVP and had a season where he scored more than 40 touchdowns, and he had a passer rating of like 93.2.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the 2019, when Lamar Jackson was at 113.4, I think, the league average was 90.4 for rating.
Yeah, yeah, and it's been creeping up. I actually tweeted that, I don't know, probably 2 or 3 months ago now, looking at the average passer rating in the league by year, also looking at the TD to interception rating in the league, or ratio in the league by year, and both numbers are steadily increasing. Same thing with completion percentage. One thing that's not from an offensive perspective is actually the percentage of yards gained by the pass. Those have pretty much plateaued at somewhere around 68 or 69%.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you look at that compared to the mid to late 70s, it was about a 1-to-1. Mm-hmm. You had about half as many yards being gained through the air as you did. Or sorry, you had about, you know, as many yards being gained through the air as you did on the ground.
Yeah, there's a very good video podcast we did recently that's still out there. Jeff Sharon did it that covers exactly that topic. But I think we've covered that on this show, so I don't want to dive too low into that. But it's important to note that, hey, it used to be a very even amount during the dead ball era of the mid-70s between passing and rushing yards, and now it's 2-to-1 again. And that's very high. We have to realize that. One of the other things you've heard me talk about on this show before is Ed Reed's interception total. Now, Ed Reed's interception total is by far the most impressive of all time of anybody who's retired at this point, and certainly of any of the people who are in the top 10 of interceptions all time. When you normalize that to the interception rates of the era, so if you look at Reed's interceptions by year, normalize those to the interceptions per game for each of those seasons, you end up with Reed showing up all with 7.5 roughly interceptions per 16 games, which is by far the highest total of all time. And in fact, it's about 40% higher than the second highest. There are a couple active players who are, you know, relatively early in their career still, Marcus Peters among those, who are now threatening that. But I just want to point out, we're willing to look as Baltimore fans and understand how great Reed is, but we also need to look at Jackson and dial it back a little bit on how impressive his passing statistics have been relative to the era.
Right. And you know, it's one of those things where I don't want to, trundle into a minefield here with, calling him a dual threat quarterback, because that's been a racially loaded term throughout NFL history, but he is. Mm-hmm. To discount what he brings to the game with his legs, is completely disingenuous, and you shouldn't do it, because you're a fool if you do. The fact that he is one of the 31 quarterbacks in NFL history to account for 40 or more touchdowns in a season, in a regular season, is dang impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting about that number, five of those seasons happened last year, 2020. So it's happened 31 times in the history of the NFL since the merger, and five of those 31 just happened. So that's pretty crazy. And they weren't all just passers too. You had Lamar Jackson's 2019, but in 2020, you had two guys doing it with their arms and their legs, Ryan Tannehill and Josh Allen in mm-hmm. Buffalo, both of whom only threw for 30-something, but if you factor in their rushing touchdowns, they were over 40, or at 40, I think, for Tannehill. But yeah, it's pretty crazy, and it is interesting that the league still looks at quarterbacks as passers only. The kind of the case study in this is Cam Newton. And if you look at his career touchdowns on the career touchdown list for quarterbacks, all you see are his passing touchdowns, which he has, I think, 180 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But if you add in his rushing and his one receiving touchdown, in which he has 71, he gets up to 251, which puts him in, I can't remember if it's the top 50 all time or if it's the top 100 all time, but he's on the career list now for total touchdowns among quarterbacks if you factor in his rushing touchdowns.
Right.
Now, it's interesting, and I think put the list in there of quarterbacks all time in terms of their rushing yards. And Lamar Jackson is actually, I think, already in the top 10 there. Or if he's not, I'm trying to remember. Could be that he's not and will actually crack the top 10 in terms of rushing yards next season.
Either way, I don't think it really matters to Ravens fans that much. What I will say is that I think even passer rating is really missing it out. I think relativized passer rating or normalized passer rating for the era is still missing out on quarterback play by missing rushing, for first of all. And one of the big components of rushing that's missing is sack totals. Now, it used to be that rushing quarterbacks accumulated some of the most prodigious sack totals you'll ever see, starting with Randall Cunningham, who 1 year was sacked about 25% of the time. It's just incredible to even think about. Jackson, in fact, has taken a few more sacks, but a lot of him are sacks on the way to a rush, which are usually for shorter negative yardage. And when you combine that with his scrambles, as we've done in previous shows here, in 2019, he averaged over 5 yards per play on his on the plays where he was either sacked or scrambled. So those are forced not to pass plays. He averaged over 5 yards per play on, including initial dropbacks. So it's just the scrambles and the sacks rolled together. So a quarterback rating misses a lot of what's really important. It's not weighted for importance of the play, which is another shortcoming of the thing. But in general, it's one of the best and one of the best carefully manufactured NFL statistics in terms of how they put the thing together and how well it's endured over the years.
Yeah. And it's interesting. It's one of the things that ESPN's QBR tries to correct for, right? They try to look at the quarterback play in both facets, the passing game and the running game, and avoiding sacks, I think. But the problem with QBR, and you know this as well as I, it's not transparent. They don't tell you how they calculate it. So, nobody can go in and check their work, or nobody can, if they want to question, well, this guy has a higher QBR than this guy, why? Because, if you look at their passer ratings, it's flipped. So, it was interesting. One of the things that I asked at the end of the article was, where do you want me to go next? Because this has kind of led me in terms of the article I wrote for Maha Report last week. There were a couple of avenues that I could take in terms of where I went next. And the one that won out was the clutch quarterback play, looking at game-winning drives and fourth-quarter comebacks, which are things that the league has been tracking since the 70s.
You got to be bad to get a fourth-quarter comeback.
Right. And so that's an interesting thing. I mean, if you look at and so one of the things I'm going to do in that study is I've looked at the guys who were the MVP of the league, and then I looked at how many of each of those two they had in the season that they were the MVP. And so you do have some seasons where you had a quarterback. If you go back far enough, you had seasons where it wasn't a quarterback winning the MVP. What a quaint thought, right? You had running backs winning the MVP. But when quarterbacks won it, even going back to the merger, in a lot of cases, it was the best quarterback on the best team. But there are a few instances where it was a quarterback who just had an amazing season on a mediocre team. So they had plenty of opportunities for fourth quarter comebacks and game winning drives. And I think what the epitome of that was Peyton Manning in 2004, I think. He had something like 6 or 7 fourth quarter comebacks and game winning drives that season. It's an odd stat in that the guy who has the most in career-wise is Peyton Manning. And I think he has like 50 of both in his career, or 53 or something like that. But from a single season standpoint, the guy who has the most in any given season is Matt Stafford.
And that eight. Should not really surprise anything. You got to be pretty bad to do this.
Yeah, you have to be on a team that has a pretty crappy defense, or at least a mediocre defense, and you know that's relying on you as the quarterback as pretty much the entire offense. And that was Matt Stafford for a lot of his career in Detroit.
Right. So the point I like to make about Jackson at this point is, at one point he was criticized for being 0-6 in games where the Ravens had trailed at halftime. And he's now 30-7 as a regular season quarterback. So he's 0-6 in games they trailed at halftime. The other side of that coin is he's 24-0 in games they led at halftime. And that means 24 out of 30 games, he got the Ravens the lead in the first half. So that's a big part of winning the game. It's not, you don't just win games in the fourth quarter. You beat the crap out of opponents in the first half of games. You never let it be a game.
Well, there's you know, Broncos fans remember the 98 season when Terrell Davis went over 2,000 yards, and he realistically could have had probably 22 or 2,300, but there were many fourth quarters where he was out of the game because the Broncos were so far ahead that Mike Shanahan didn't need to keep him in the game. So he was resting Terrell Davis in the fourth quarter and John Elway in a lot of situations. Because it was stupid to play your stars because they could get hurt playing that fourth quarter. And if you were already up by 28, why leave them in? But yeah, it's interesting that that was one of the directions that they wanted me to go. The other direction that I'm still going to do the study because I've already started looking at it is the total number of quarterback rushing touchdowns every season in the history of the league, and then the percentage of quarterback rushing touchdowns relative to total rushing touchdowns, because that was one of the things that really jumped out at me about 2020.
You take total league rushing touchdowns, divide by 32, and then take individual quarterbacks, divide by expected effectively from that?
No, just total rushing touchdowns and divide the quarterback rushing touchdowns by the total rushing touchdowns. So just what percentage of all rushing touchdowns in a given year were done by or accumulated by quarterbacks?
Okay, small piece of analytics advice. I'd multiply that number by 32 or by the number of teams in the league to get you relative to a league average team. I think that number means more. And then you're going to get a number like 2.07 or 3.09 to when you do that, to give you the percentage of an average team you get.
Well, and yeah, I'll do that. But the goal, at least in my mind, in doing or making that statistic or looking at that statistic is just, you know, how much of the rushing touchdowns in a given year are done by quarterbacks? And, you know, is that something that has changed?
Okay, because are done by all quarterbacks.
Correct.
So, for example, all quarterback rushing touchdowns divided by all rushing touchdowns.
Yes, or all touchdowns. That's what I've been doing. All rushing touchdowns. So, for example, in 2020, there were 532 rushing touchdowns league wide in the regular season. 114 were by quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So 1 in 5. And of those 114, 60 of those were accounted for by 8 guys. So Cam Newton and Kyler Murray both had more than 10. Mm-hmm. And there have actually only been 10 instances in NFL history when a quarterback rushed for 10 or more touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Cam Newton has the league record for rushing touchdowns in a regular season at 14.
Is it Steve Grogan? How many did he have? Because I know that was
Steve Grogan had, I think, 12 in 76. But it's funny because I went and looked at him because he's up there in the top 10 in terms of quarterback rushing touchdowns all time. Mm-hmm. But he finished his career with, I think, 31 or 32. Hmm. So he had 12 in one season, and then he never had a season with more than 3. Where you've got Cam Newton has had a season now of 14 and a season of 12. In fact, there have been years where the rushing touchdown leader had fewer than 12 touchdowns. I think it was 2014 or 2013. There were 4 guys tied with 11 rushing touchdowns.
And that includes running backs, you're saying, in there.
Yeah, anybody. Just total rushing touchdowns. that had 11. So we've never had a quarterback lead the league in rushing touchdowns, but Cam Newton has put up rushing touchdown numbers in two separate seasons that, if they had occurred in a different season, would have led the league in rushing touchdowns.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, you also, besides Newton and Murray, you had Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Ryan Tannehill, Justin Herbert, which I found surprising. He had 5 rushing touchdowns last season. Mm-hmm. Teddy Bridgewater had 5, and Carson Wentz had 5.
But the big 5 you're saying are 7, 7, 8, 11, and 12. That was, 23, 31, 45 of that. 45 put together.
45 of the 60 that I'm talking about came from the top 5. So, I mean, you really had, and again, if you look at, and there's a somebody did a really nice study of this, and it's on Wikipedia, of I think it's actually the page name is Dual Threat Quarterbacks, and I think I linked it in the article, but they show quarterback career rushing yardage, quarterback career rushing touchdowns, and quarterback career rushing attempts. The one thing in terms of, you know, Lamar Jackson, he is, if he has the same average number of attempts in 2021 that he has had throughout his career, which is, I think, something like 145 rushing attempts, he will break into the top 10 all time in terms of quarterback rushing attempts in 2021. Now, number 10 is Tom Brady. And that also surprised me because I'm like, wait, Tom Brady? Well, Tom Brady has been the master of the 4th-and-1 QB sneak for 2 yards. Tom Brady
He has a ton of QB kneels career. He's won a lot of football games.
Well, and that's the other thing that I actually point out in the article. It's another thing that the league is pretty stupid about. They still count kneel downs by quarterbacks as a run for negative 1 yard.
They need to take that out of there. It doesn't make any sense at all.
So Tom Brady's career average in terms of yards per carry is 1.6 because he has so many kneel downs. But I think I actually did the analysis for Peyton Manning as a Bronco, and he was credited with something like 36 rushing attempts. 29 of those were kneel downs.
Right. And I noticed that too. And it was actually came up in Sarah Ellison's paper about quarterback rushing and whether, you know, that was sustainable and whatnot. But Manning had something like negative half a yard to negative 1 yard per carry over that period in terms of what he did. So he had almost no runs for positive yards was what that told me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was he not only that, but he also would self sack.
Yes.
Which is an interesting thing because if you know, you have the guys that are so macho that they're like, well, I can stand in here and, you know, I'm going to get blasted. I'm just going to stand here and get blasted. If Manning knew he was going to get completely demolished by the guy coming, he would just drop like, okay, I give up. You've got me. You sacked me. And it makes sense from the perspective of, you know, if you lose your starting quarterback, you pretty much, your season is in the toilet. So,
All right, let's go on a little bit with what this means for Lamar Jackson and some other things about normalizing the touchdown interception ratio that I know you've worked on.
Okay. So, as we talked about previously, the league in general has gotten much better at passing the ball over the course of the past, well, since its existence. So if you go back to the 40s and 50s in the NFL, the touchdown to interception ratio league wide was 0.5 to 1. You had 2 interceptions for every 1 passing touchdown. That has been completely flipped now in 2020, where that ratio was 2.2 to 1. So you had more than 2 passing touchdowns for every 1 interception thrown. And this goes back to your point from previously about Ed Reed and how you have to normalize his interception numbers because fewer and fewer interceptions are being thrown year over year. By the same token, if you do a stat analysis like what I did here with the quarterbacks that have had a ratio of 4 to 1 or better, and there have been 51 seasons, starting quarterback seasons in the history of the NFL, where a quarterback has had a ratio of 4-1 or better, you have to normalize that. And so if you look at the earliest one on this list, which is 1960 Cleveland Browns quarterback Milt Plum, who was a name that prior to doing this study, I'd never heard about this guy or heard of this guy. He had this phenomenal season where at the time it was just unreal. He threw 21 touchdowns and only 5 interceptions. So that was an actual interception ratio of 4.2-1. But the league as a whole had a TD to interception ratio of 0.8-1.
Mm-hmm.
So if you normalize to what the rest of the league did, his number gets crazy high. Let's see, what is his number normalized to here? Normalizes to 17.7.
How'd you do that? Because I would think you'd take 4.2 divided by 0.81.
I think what I did is I looked at the difference from where the ratio, their individual ratio was from the league
to today,
and then divided by the actual league number. So I'm trying to remember.
That's okay. Course. It's okay. The point is well taken. Milt Plum, kind of a famous for another reason in a small way. He was the starting quarterback for the 1966-67 Detroit Lions, where George Plimpton went in to play some backup plays. And he's referred to fairly often in the book Paper Lion. Not a completely historically accurate record of football, but definitely like the book Ball Four. There's a lot of real interesting inside football in that book.
Oh yeah, yeah. If you look at this list, these 51 guys. I mean, some of these are household names: Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. But a lot of these guys were guys that had just one amazing season, mm-hmm. and in some cases, it wasn't even a full season. You have guys on here like Damon Heward, right? I mean, he started 8 games that year for the Chiefs. So technically he was their starting quarterback because he started the most games of any quarterback on their team, but he only threw 244 passes, and this was back in 2006. So this wasn't, in the 1960s where 244 passes might be an entire season's worth mm-hmm. of passes. You've got some guys on here like David Garrard, right? I mean, he has this phenomenal season in 2007, 18 touchdowns, 3 picks, but he never repeated that. So that got me thinking about, how often do these guys that have these phenomenal single seasons repeat them? And so if you look at this list of 51, there are 7 guys on here who show up more than one time.
Mm-hmm.
I call that out in the text. Oh, there we go. Pulled back up here. There we go. So Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes has already done it 3 times. Matt Ryan surprised me. And Peyton Manning surprised me in the fact that he was only on there twice in terms of these 51 seasons. So of the guys who have only done it once and are still playing, there were 5 guys that I really went into depth and looked at, okay, how much of an outlier was that single season that they had, right, relative to their career numbers. So those 5 guys were Lamar Jackson, Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr, mm-hmm. one of those cars, the one who's still playing.
Derek Carr.
And Deshaun Watson are the 5. So... and what I did is I looked at how big of a difference from their historic seasonal norms each of those seasons was, both in terms of their touchdown percentage and in terms of their interception rate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Lamar Jackson, his 36-6 season, 2019, while it was phenomenal, in fact, in terms of his percentage of passes that resulted in a touchdown that season was 9%.
It's the second highest of all time, I believe.
I think so. Now, and from a career perspective, Lamar Jackson doesn't have enough throws to be on the list yet. Mm-hmm. I think it's a minimum 1,500 passing attempts. When he does cross that 1,500 threshold, assuming he performs as he has been to this point in his career, he will be third all time mm-hmm. in terms of touchdown percentage. Sid Luckman is the current career leader for touchdown percentage. And I think he's at 7.3.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at what Lamar Jackson did in 2020, while it wasn't 9% of his throws that resulted in a touchdown, he was still at something like 6.9.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you say, you know, the best ever in the history of the NFL was a quarterback that had a 7.2 and Lamar Jackson was only at 6.9 in 2020, that's still pretty darn good.
Right. Now that's 7.2 normalized would be a much higher figure. Luckman's statistics are astounding relative to the era, as astounding as they are relative to the game still.
Yeah. So at the end of each in-depth analysis of these five quarterbacks, I made a verdict in my own mind and in the text of whether or not I thought they would be able to reproduce the phenomenal 4-1 or better season that they had. Mm-hmm. And Lamar Jackson, I definitely think he will, because his numbers in that season are not too far off what he has done so far in his career, right, both in terms of touchdown percentage and interception percentage. I think the only quarterback that I said I didn't think was going to be able to reproduce their season was Carr. And that's because the touchdown to interception ratio that he had, I think 28 touchdown passes and 6 picks in 2016. That was quite an outlier from his career numbers.
He's also older, so you know you're better off making this prediction for a young quarterback to say, yeah, they'll reach the heights. Tannehill, right. How old is he now?
31 or okay. No, 32, something like that. But Tannehill's interesting in that I think he's probably got at least with what quarterbacks are doing now and how long they're playing, he's probably got 3 or 4 more good seasons in him. I mean, Tom Brady's going to be 43 next season, but a lot of quarterbacks that are, you know, still standard bearers and year in, year out, top 10 performing quarterbacks are over the age of 30 now.
Another reason to really believe in modern quarterback play has changed is because the quarterback is much more protected than they've ever been in the history of the NFL. And, you know, it's very hard to be playing into your mid-30s at quarterback way back when. Even Baltimore fans remember Johnny Unitas. After 1964, he had a pretty good year in 1967, but he really was never the same again. And he battled through injuries to play some, but really was never the same quarterback again for the rest of his career.
Right. And you have to wonder, guys like Steve Young, guys like John Elway, guys like Randall Cunningham, if they had been protected like quarterbacks are protected now,
mm-hmm.
how much longer would they have played? I mean, people forget Steve Young retired because he had one too many concussions. And his doctor said, if you don't want to have dementia, you know, in 10 years, you need to stop playing football. John Elway walked away after winning back-to-back Super Bowls because he wanted to be able to still walk in 10 years. It was, you know, his body had taken so much punishment, not only because of the fact that they didn't protect quarterbacks anywhere near as much as they do now, but also just the way he played. I mean, there's a story about him. It was actually playing the Colts in, I think, 83 or 84. And it was like 3rd and 3, and he ends up, you know, there's nobody open, so he ends up running for it. And there's a linebacker that comes up and hits him like a yard short. And he just keeps his legs driving and ends up pushing the guy back for 1.5 yards and gets the first down. But, I mean, it was just a real, you know, it was like a running back hitting a defender and pushing him. And it's one of those things where, you know, if he did that as a rookie, and then you think about what he did to get to the Super Bowl and in the Super Bowl in that first year that the Broncos went to the Super Bowl and won it in 97, mm-hmm. With the helicopter play that Broncos fans, you know, it's just burned into our memories. He wanted it so badly that here's this 36-year-old quarterback diving for a first down and getting just lambasted by a linebacker coming running through.
Yeah, it's something they just don't allow. They coach out of players immediately if they do that. And they've certainly been very careful with Jackson in particular to get him to run out of bounds a lot and to not take chances with his body on the field. He's exceptionally good with it, by the way. Yeah. You know, he, Wilson, a lot of others who've been, you know, durable quarterbacks during their careers, and Wilson's course obviously for longer, you know, they've been good about avoiding hits.
Yeah, and Russell Wilson made a really good point in an interview that stuck with me. He said, "I don't slow up when I'm going to the sideline. In fact, I accelerate." And he said, "The reason why is that as soon as I get close, defenders have to back off."
Yep.
Because they're worried about getting the roughing penalty, getting the unnecessary roughness penalty, even if I'm close to being out of bounds. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it has probably saved me literally hundreds of big hits in my career, because instead of trying to turn up and get an extra 2 or 3 yards, I just accelerate out of bounds.
Right. I don't know if I completely agree with the math on the hundreds of hits, but it probably has saved him 30 to 50 hits over his career. And you know what that defender is thinking? He's honestly making that judgment not as a team judgment, because the team might or might not say, "Hey, the 15-yard penalty isn't worth it. You hit their quarterback. Just go ahead and do it." You know, but it's the money. They're going to get a FedEx package that next day saying, "Here, sign this. We're going to deduct, you know, $25,000 from your paycheck next week." So they're very cognizant of that when they're on the field. I think they have a good brotherhood in terms of not wanting to injure each other, but I think it's really ingrained by the regular packages they get in the mail on Monday mornings.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it is interesting. You know, and back to the quarterbacks running the ball and quarterback touchdowns. I'll be curious to see, because so far I've really only looked at, you know, the first 3 or 4 years going back. But it seems like this percentage of quarterbacks scoring touchdowns relative to total rushing touchdowns from 2020 was exceedingly high. That's something that I'm going to also pay attention to next season and see if it stays that way or if just 2020 was an anomaly. You know, I could see Cam Newton, you know, kind of pulling back. And not doing, not running as much anymore. Kyler Murray's probably going to continue doing it. Josh Allen's going to continue doing it. Lamar Jackson's going to continue doing it. Tannehill, maybe not.
Yep.
You know, again, you got to wonder at what point do the coaches try and coach that out of him, right? You know, if it comes down to, yes, you could run for this or you could throw for it. The calculus that I guess I'm certain that the coaches and the GMs want him to make is throw it instead of run it. Because, you know, the value of Ryan Tannehill to the Titans is significantly higher than the backup quarterback, whoever that might be.
Yeah, he's critical, that's for sure. 2 points I want to make about this, because this is a great presentation here, Joe, and I appreciate you taking us through this. Obviously, a lot of hard work went into this in terms of going through and then normalizing the data, which, by the way, that's exactly what you should do. It's a great way of doing it. The first is to look at the remarkable 36-6 season of Jackson. I think Ravens fans want to put that season, you know, at or near the top of all time. I think the reasons why you would think that would be the case are different than passer rating or touchdown interception ratio, because when you normalize that touchdown interception ratio, it's about what number did we say it was all time?
12.5 to 1, which is, I think, 22nd all time out of the 51.
Okay, so 22nd all time. We're pretty sure that includes everybody, because the way you pick the 51 were the highest TD to interception ratios of all time. It's unlikely anybody would have snuck into the top 22 otherwise. So it's, you know, in terms of TD interception ratio, it's certainly damn impressive. The 22nd best of all time, we'd take it every year if we could get it. But that's not even the really remarkable thing about Lamar Jackson. That's where statistics, PFF ratings, whatever you go, just fail to capture his greatness, because the Ravens offense is highly throttled back in terms of what it tries to accomplish. It tries to basically beat the crap out of opponents with fewer drives and more efficient drives that are sustained. So that being the case, the real number to look at for Jackson is the points per drive number. And they were at 3.08 in 2019. That's a historic number. And that uses the Football Outsiders definition of what counts as a drive. And, you know, the end of a half doesn't count, for example, if there's a kneel down on the play. So it's that kind of, you have to be careful about what you consider a drive. But the 3.08 was the fifth best in NFL history at the time. That's the number for Jackson that tells you Jackson is being great. It's not anything about yardage. It's not even really the touchdown interception ratio. That'll give you the clue. It's how that points per drive is. For a team that otherwise these last 2 years been pretty damn mediocre in terms of the offensive talent around him.
Yeah. And the total touchdowns is amazing. But again, that's just an individual player. As was pointed out in some of the comments in the article that I wrote, you're looking at these quarterbacks. Well, if they played for a crappy team, yeah, they may have put up some great individual numbers, but, how did their team do? Yeah. Right. You know, that was, somebody was commenting on, well, Aaron Rodgers, he can't be all that great. He's only won one Super Bowl. Dan Marino can't be all that great. He didn't win a single Super Bowl. You know, It's that same argument that, you're not great unless you can raise the level of all the players around you, like Manning has done, or like Manning did during his time playing. It is an interesting thing to look at, and it's one of the things that I'm digging into as well in terms of, what do you define as a drive? Because when I'm looking at the game winning drives and the fourth quarter comebacks, how do you look at these game-winning drives, and where do you cut it off, right? Because if you get the ball back down four with 12 seconds to play in the fourth quarter and no timeouts on your 20, do you count
that
against
the quarterback? Did you just fail to convert a drive? Yeah.
Right. Do you count that against a quarterback because he didn't score a touchdown in 12 seconds with no timeouts, needing 80 yards? No. So in that study, I think I cut it off at 30 seconds. So, and you could make the argument that I probably should have cut it off even further than that. I should have said, well, realistically, if you get the ball back with less than 30 seconds and needing a touchdown to win, does that count? Well, all right. Well, what about drives where you only need a field goal to win, and you get it back? So then you do get in some gray area of, let's say you get the ball back on the 35 after a punt, you've got 30 seconds left, no timeouts. Can you get into position for a field goal if you're down two? Sure. I mean, you only need 30 yards legitimately for some of the kickers in the league. It does bring up some interesting questions and leads to some discussion about, well, where do you slice and dice the data set and how do you look at it? But
very hard to define. I agree.
Yeah. Where I really wanted to go with that study, though, is, because the league calls out successful fourth quarter comebacks or game-winning drive attempts, but there's no accounting for unsuccessful ones.
Good point.
Right. So I wanted to look at, okay, well, that's great. This guy has, 40 in his career, but how often did he have a chance to do this and fail?
You're just giving a hit total. That's all you are. Not a batting average. So it's,
yeah.
It's,
yeah. I want to see a batting average. I want to see, for somebody like Mahomes, my guess is he's batting close to 1,000, right? I can't honestly remember a situation where, his team needed a score at the end of the game and he didn't get it for them. Mm-hmm. Or if he has, it's been few and far between. Mm-hmm. And that's really what some people look at as, if you want an MVP, what's the MVP? The MVP is the guy that no defensive coordinator wants to see with the ball in his hands at the end of the game where it's either tied or they need one score to win. Mm-hmm. Because, you're not going to stop Peyton Manning in his prime. You're not going to stop Tom Brady. You're not going to stop Patrick Mahomes. You're probably not going to stop Aaron Rodgers.
Or Lamar Jackson coming out of the bathroom.
Or yeah.
Joe, I got to stop it there. This is no worries. Great material. I really encourage people to go out to Mile High Report. By the way, Mile High Report has some good other writers too, but Joe's very good, and he does a lot of the analysis stuff for Mile High Report. You can also find him on Twitter. He's at NDJOMO78. NDJOMO. 76, sorry. Give him a follow there. Make sure you follow his work. I look forward to his new writing when it comes up, and whenever I think it has kind of a Raven slant to it, like this piece did, I try and get him on the show. And really appreciate you having the willingness to come on us with us fairly regularly, Joe. Loved your last one about OT arm length, by the way, offensive tackle arm length. That one was just of the podcast variety, but very entertaining data. Great draft topic.
Yeah. Well, as a former offensive lineman, anytime I can do some analytics on offensive line play, I jump at it. But it's one of those things where you've got a really small audience there in terms of people that want to read and listen about offensive line play, and then people who are interested in analytics in terms of football, and so the Venn diagram of that is pretty small.
I don't disagree with you, and we're very blessed to have a lot of the center of that Venn diagram, a lot of the intersection of that Venn diagram, who are people who listen to this show. And really appreciate you listeners out there. I don't say it enough, but the fact that you appreciate this kind of material is the reason why we continue to pursue guests with highly analytic content. Joe, thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ken. This has been fun.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.